Welcome all to Cultural Mechanics, a podcast that emerges out of my research and interest in a variety of topics relating to digital culture, electronic art, critical media, creative technologies, the arts, the humanities, and a whole lot more. I am, of course, James O'Sullivan. Unusual episode. So I am currently sitting on the steps outside the McLaurin building at the University of Victoria. I'm currently at the Digital Humanities Summer Institute, which is one of the largest community gatherings of DH scholars, students, practitioners. We get together and we share knowledge and expertise. I've been involved in this for about 5 years now, both as an instructor and as someone who's involved in the organisation of the DHSI colloquium. So in this episode I am going to be joined by some colleagues that I met in John Barber's digital storytelling class, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves now. So,
My name is Andrew Prowitz. I'm a librarian from Ripon College, which is in Wisconsin. My third time at DHSI, and it gets better every time.
I'm Liam Murphy. I do exhibits and programming at the Glenn A. Black Laboratory of Archaeology at Indiana University. This is my first time at DHSI, and it's been a really awesome experience.
And I'm Colleen Renahan. I am a music historian from the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada, and it's my first DHSI.
Okay, so two newcomers. So what are your thoughts on DHSI so far?
Sure, I mean, it's been a really fascinating experience for me thus far, just in that there are people from so many different fields that come together here and are working on some really innovative projects. So it's a nice place to feel as though you're outside of your comfort zone, but really advancing your skill set in some really cool ways and unexpected ways too.
Yeah, I've really found that it's a really kind of safe place to learn about new ideas and to be kind of a novice and be treated with respect for your skill levels and also what you don't know, but also what you do kind of bring to the table.
And what about you, Andrew? You're more of a veteran.
So. Semi-veteran. It's only been three times I've been here, but it feels like home already. Some people are so warm and welcoming. Old friends, for 2 years, but feels like it's been decades.
So you mentioned warm. One thing that... So we're sitting here outside the McLaurin building, and for the first time in my 5 or 6 years at DHSI, it is raining, which of course feels like home to me, but it's somewhat unusual. So as I mentioned earlier, we were brought together by John Barber's digital storytelling group, and digital storytelling, what attracted you to that?
Well, I mean, I think I didn't realize that there were so many different forms of digital storytelling, so it's been a really wild ride so far, just checking out the different options that one has available to them.
Yeah, I really came into this looking for maybe new ways to interpret kind of exhibits in our museum, so looking for new techniques, methods for expressing kind of archaeological information or heritage information. One of the things I was really kind of struck with is how contentious the idea of digital storytelling is. Seems like it's really hard to agree on what constitutes digital storytelling, what kind of separates it from traditional storytelling. So that's been a really interesting kind of experience.
As a librarian, I came here wanting to find other pedagogical opportunities for students. I teach a lot of students how to research for 10-page papers, and I think there are better ways to spend students' time. So
yeah,
it's been really good to see other opportunities out there.
So with that, the plan with this episode is to tell a digital story of our own, the focus of which will be the Digital Humanities Summer Institute here at Victoria, so that we can get a better sense of what it's all about, what it means to the community, where it's come from, and where it's going. Sound like a plan?
Sounds good.
It's good.
Yeah?
It's great.
All right, let's do it.
So what is your name and your position in relation to DHSI?
My name is Alisa Arbuckle, and I am the Assistant Director of Research Partnerships and Development for the Electronic Textual Cultures Lab. The Electronic Textual Cultures Lab, or ETCL as we call it, is the support lab for DHSI. We help to run DHSI, and I also work with DHSI on a kind of more visual plane by doing a lot of the social media stuff, a lot of the FAQ, and I am the host for week two of DHSI.
How did you first encounter DHSI?
I first encountered DHSI when I was an undergraduate student at the University of British Columbia, and I was developing an honors thesis that I also wanted to create a companion website for. And in researching how other people had mixed literary study and web design and web development, I found out about the digital humanities and quickly found out about DHSI after that.
Has DHSI evolved in ways that have surprised you?
I think that the most surprising thing for me was the very large population boom that we experienced, 4 years ago now. In my mind, it was really concurrent with when the Congress for the Humanities and Social Sciences came to UVic. We seemed to spike from a group of 150-ish people to 400 within a year, and that has just grown exponentially every year since then. For 2016, we have over 800 people at DHSI.
Do you have a favorite memory or story from DHSI?
Oh, that is an excellent question. Favorite memories or stories? I would say there are a lot of wonderful memories from DHSI. I've been coming to DHSI since 2011, so for the last 5 years. I think one of the most fun moments was when Amy Morrison gave a institute lecture either last year or 2 years ago now, and ended up taking a selfie with all of DHSI in the background, and that was just a very fun moment for us.
What do you think DHSI will look like in 5 years?
Well, I think that it's sort of hard to predict what DHSI will look like in 5 years, because the institute itself is really reflexive of the community and really responds to the community. So all of the community courses that are offered are offered based on the suggestion and the request and the proposals from the community. So it's sort of hard to know what, at least from a programming perspective, it will look like in 5 years, because it will totally depend on where digital humanities as a field goes in 5 years. And I think that although I might have some suspicions about where it is going to go, it's really anybody's bet.
And finally, what is your DH?
I would say my DH is working with a really, really incredible network of people. I feel so lucky to work with smart and committed and wonderful colleagues. And that makes DHSI actually a really special time for me, because I get to see all of these people who I work with over email and over Skype and over Google Docs throughout the year. I get to actually spend time with them, and that's really meaningful to me.
What is your name and your position in relation to DHSI?
My name is Diane Jakaki. I am an assistant director of DHSI.
How did you first encounter DHSI?
I first came to DHSI in 2006. I was in my first year of the doctoral program at University of Waterloo. And Amy Morrison, who was one of my professors, arranged for me to get funding to come here and take the TEI Fundamentals course, I believe it was called. Actually, it may have had a different name at that point. And I've come back almost every year since then. So this is my 10th anniversary.
Has DHSI evolved in ways that have surprised you?
Yes, DHSI has evolved in different ways, some which have surprised me, some of which now make sense in hindsight. When I first came, a very vivid memory I have of that first year is there being a banquet on the last night of the institute, and we all were able to fit into a restaurant, in a normal-sized restaurant. I mean, we bought out the restaurant, but we could all fit there. And I was struck by what a, it didn't seem to me at the time to be a small group, but one that was actually very horizontally connected even at that point. I don't remember how many people were there that year, but it seemed to me to be a very manageable group. And when you think about it 10 years later, it's probably exponentially, at least by 10, how many people are here. And I've witnessed that growth. I've also seen how DHSI has evolved to respond to that growth. So not only in terms of the number of courses and the number of opportunities for people to engage, but also how it's been welcoming over time to new people who've come to DHSI with different expectations and different backgrounds and perspectives.
Do you have any favorite memories or stories from previous years?
Favorite stories are very social in orientation, I would say. I remember vividly the first year I stayed in a cluster house with Julia Flanders and Susan Brown and Amy Morrison. And I knew Amy from university, but I didn't know Julia or Susan other than really by reputation. And I was still a doctoral student at that point. So it was really a profound experience to be with those people who I so very much admired. And to be included in their social group kind of that way was really wonderful, and that became a very important part of my experience here. I do remember two Irish people arriving, James O'Sullivan and Mary Galvin, and I was really struck by their intrepid nature and eagerness to get involved in what was going on here, and was really lucky to be able to work with them and get to know them, because it was really transformative to me in terms of understanding why this was important to different people at different points in their careers, and how there were opportunities to collaborate and support and encourage and again, collaborate, right? So it all comes back full circle with people you would not have known otherwise.
And what will DHSI look like in 5 years?
I think DHSI continues to evolve in different ways. And one of the things that I think is very important is the idea that people who have been a part of its development have recognized that there are ways for it to play out that aren't physically in Victoria. So, you know, you look at DHSI at Oxford and at Leipzig and at Guelph and Hilt. I mean, all of these entities that really have grown out of this ethos, I guess, and have taken on their own identity, have been responsive to their own communities and have figured out how they fit in those ways. I see more of that. I see while the Victoria experience is always going to be important, you know, this large gathering and people who come together. As more people recognize, and more of us who are involved at a high level recognize how we can enhance this type of experience and tweak it for our own particular, whether it's regional or particular methodological interest, I think that's going to help it to continue, and that's how I think it'll look like in five more years, right? That there will be, that these kind of satellite DHSIs will be even stronger. Not that they're going to be everywhere, but that they will actually inform the discourse in a really strong way.
And finally, the last question is, in a sentence or two, what is your DH?
So can I answer it three ways?
Absolutely.
Okay, so usually when I answer the question, my DH is collaborative. Last week, I answered the question, my DH is Canadian, for particular reasons, many of them having to do with my own personal professionalization and understanding DH, and DHSI is very much a part of that. You know, the way I identify as a digital humanist is very much because of this this group and the way that this that DHSI has grown as I've grown. The third way I would describe my DH as my DH is about teaching. So it's not just formal teaching or pedagogy in a classroom, but how we teach one another and what it means to teach and learn as peers, as well as in a more traditional hierarchical sense.
Well, hi, Ray. Thanks for coming today. So to begin with, so could you tell us your name and what your position is in relation to DHSI?
Sure. My name is Ray Siemens, and I'm nominal director of DHSI. And I say nominal because DHSI really is a community-oriented event that's run through consensual processes that the community has originated.
So can you tell me about the digital humanities community that existed before the beginnings of DHSI? So where did it exist and kind of how?
So, well, all over the place. DHSI's first year was 2001, at least the origin we trace is 2001. And the DH community at that point was already fairly established internationally. There was a Canadian DH group, which is a national entry point for most grad students and faculty in Canada. Not the only one, but A1. There was also the Association for Computers and the Humanities in the United States at that point. There were the origins, the group that originated what's now called the European Association for Digital Humanities existed, and a conference, a joint conference between the two groups, the European group predominantly and the American group, had been going on since, I think, 1989, so already by then a good 11 or so years. So a fairly established group of people, not as large a group of people as today, but still a fairly established group of people who are all thinking about the same good things that we try to do when we get together here at DHSI.
Can you sort of describe the inception of DHSI and kind of how it first came about?
Sure. So it's very informal. The easiest way to talk about it is to say that the first couple DHSIs were a lot like what we now call a VAT camp, which is a certain type of unconference. So the first DHSI happened in conjunction with a conference we were running on digital humanities curriculum and pedagogy at what was then called Malaspina University College in Nanaimo. It's now called Vancouver Island University, one of our original partners in DHSI. We got together on, I think it was a Thursday night, at a local pub, about 30 some of us, and we talked about what we wanted to learn about and what we had to offer to teach others. And then we enacted that over a few days. And then we were done and said, see you next year. We didn't know it would be a next year at that point. We just figured it would be a nice thing to do again. And next year, a few more people came. The year after, a few more people came. And then suddenly, rather than doing things the night before, we were planning a couple months before so we could talk to our chairs and deans about getting support to come. And now we're on an 18-month planning cycle where we're making our plans. We'll be announcing the courses for 2017 in the next day or two, at least a number of them, not all of them yet. And we feel a lot more organized than we were in those first few years. But what we try to do is really capture that same sort of spirit. It's people who get along, share a common set of interests, and the time together is meant to enable, in the most positive way possible, those interests.
So has DHSI evolved in ways that have surprised you?
Absolutely, but only positive surprise. I think it's wonderful that so many people are interested in the digital humanities. I know there are many reasons for that, but I think it's wonderful. I'm a third-generation humanist by background, and so I've got maybe as much as you can, almost an instinctual appreciation for the humanities. And I see the humanities as being something that reflects our understanding of our culture around us, and digital is now part of that. So I feel that it's a very appropriate thing for us to be doing, digital humanities, which are still the humanities.
So do you have any favorite memories or stories from past DHSIs that you'd like to share?
You know, so many really positive experiences. You know, learning about anything, especially if one's already really accomplished in a certain area, you know, say person X is an established historian, they want to learn something digital, they come to a place like this, could be this, it could be any of our partners, or it could be other offerings elsewhere. And suddenly they're put into a liminal mode where their expertise doesn't mean the same thing it does when they're in their history department, when they're in their history classroom. And great things happen in liminal spaces. So I find almost every year there are really, really positive, surprising things that happen from someone who feels that they've been breaking things all week. And I heard this story yesterday chatting with someone before the colloquium. A young woman says, you know, I've broken this, I've broken that. She's talking about coding, she's talking about interactions with databases, but today I fixed it all. And that was wonderful to hear. And that type of thing is the best, because you know that that experience then will lead to other positive experiences, and you know then that the thing that was being broken and fixed, at least hypothetically, is going, once it's fixed and integrated with other things, going to do something really interesting in a much larger project, let's say, or set of concerns that will be beyond the gratification of getting the technology right. And that's a typical, very positive experience for me too. And I like the fact that when people come here, they not only work really hard and interact really hard with others, but they play hard too, and that's all part of it. That's something you can't do when people talk about putting a course online. You can't bond with people in that way, but you can do that here. Partnerships, research partnerships, and other types of personal and professional partnerships begin here, and it's hard not to feel really strong and positive about that too.
And so one final question, what is your DH?
Great question. My DH is about people and humanity. The humanities serve humanity and reflect humanity, reflect human experience over time, and any ways we have of accessing and conveying that. And that ultimately is about people. What's important to us when we talk about the humanities now is not only what's been important to people over time, but it's those things that we can access. And the chief way we access what's going on now is by interacting and talking with people and getting a sense of what's important to them, what's important to us in relation to what's important to them, and coming to common understandings. So I say my DH is really about common understandings, as much as they can be achieved, and working together toward shared goals.
My name is Kate. I'm from Victoria, British Columbia, and my DH is undergrad research.
Hi, I'm Masha. I'm from Boston, and my DH is visualized, sonified, and otherwise fabulous.
Hi, I'm Josh Oliveira from Vancouver, BC, and my DH is all around us.
My name is Mike from Cincinnati, Ohio. My DH is open access, making tools, techs, and skills available to the greatest number of people for the greatest good.
My name is Melissa. I'm from Walla Walla, Washington, and my DH is liberating. It's the freedom to ask new questions, to learn from and with new communities, to make, to break, to fail, and to create new bodies of knowledge and new ways of understanding information.
My name is Jessica from Vancouver, BC. My DH is writing and creating stories for the web.
My name is Marissa, I'm from Los Angeles. My DH is interdisciplinary, creative, self-aware, and socially aware.
I'm Adam from Pullman, Washington. My DH is old and evolving.
Hi, I'm John Barber, and my DH is digital storytelling and sound and digital humanities.